This was the first episode of SmackDown coming out of Bad Blood this weekend, the post-Bad Blood episode. A lot happened over the weekend. We had, of course, the return of Jimmy Uso, and we had the return of The Rock. No mention of The Rock being on this show tonight, so I figured he wasn't going to be there. They did announce that Roman Reigns would sound off. That's what they said. But there was no Rock on this show, and I know some people are going to be surprised or upset about that. I don't know what his deal is. I really don't. You know, he hasn't been seen since after WrestleMania. He shows up on Saturday. He's got his custom belt over his shoulder. He walks out. He gets a big reaction. Everyone's excited. Oh my God, The Rock is back. What does this mean for Survivor Series? What does this mean for War Games? As it turns out, doesn't look like it's going to mean much of anything, because he was barely even mentioned tonight. Roman Reigns was out there. Jimmy Uso was out there. They had microphones. They were cutting promos. No mention of The Rock. Nothing. Outside of some highlights they showed, it was almost like you would never even know what happened. Now, there's a report in the latest Observer from Meltzer. I know. But Meltzer is saying The Rock is not even scheduled to be at WrestleMania. They're going to be in Las Vegas next year, WrestleMania 41, and at this moment, if that is to be believed, and I'm not so sure I believe that's the way it's going to end up, but The Rock cannot make WrestleMania next year. He is not even going to be on the show. Now, if you believe that, I mean, it's hard to believe, given that, you know, he was at WrestleMania this year, he's tied into this whole Bloodline story. They're in Las Vegas, the fight capital of the world here, right? The big entertainment capital of the country. It's hard for me to believe. But you know what? If he can't do the show, good. Then they have no excuse not to give us Cody Rhodes against Randy Orton for the WWE Championship. Because that's been the one thing. If you are someone who is interested in seeing Cody Rhodes defend the title or even challenge for the title, if you were to lose it before then, to Randy Orton. The Rock was always sort of the big, no pun intended, the Rock that was thrown into the plans here, because you had to figure that it was going to be Rock and Cody, or Rock and Cody and Roman. Well, if Rock is not going to be on the show, or he's not going to be wrestling a match, great. Then you got no excuse. Cody and Randy is a match that a lot of people have been wanting to see for a very long time since Cody came back to the company. That's a WrestleMania-worthy match. Now there's no excuse not to do it on the big stage. So that's a good thing. But we'll see where Rock ends up falling in the pecking order here, if he's on the show or not. He wasn't on this show. Roman Reigns was, though. And he and Jimmy Uso, there was one thing that was made very clear from tonight's show, which is that these two men need help. They cannot fight these battles on their own. They're taking on Solo Sikoa and the Tongans and Jacob Fatu, and it's just too much. And Jimmy Uso said it best at the beginning of the show. He said it again at the end of the show. We need help. And he all but told you who that help was that he was referring to, even though Roman Reigns, he's not really enamored with the idea. But Jimmy Uso is going to be looking for some help very soon from a certain someone on the other show. So you can already see the pieces are now starting to move and fall into place for a potential War Games match at Survivor Series next month. Kevin Owens was not on the Bad Blood show on Saturday, but he made a lot of news coming out of the show because he attacked Cody Rhodes in the parking lot. Something that they kind of referenced, but they didn't even show you highlights of it on TV tonight. They're really portraying this as, okay, we want to keep this under wraps. We want to keep this as close to the vest as possible. It's almost like their version of Tony Khan and Brawl Out, where people know it happened and it's this big thing, but we're not going to talk about it. We're not going to show you highlights of it. We're not going to go out there and give you the details of it. That's kind of the approach that they're taking with this. Kevin Owens is suspended. He was fined and suspended for what he did, beating up Cody Rhodes outside of the arena on Saturday, but he showed up on the show tonight. Cody wanted a piece of him. He wanted a piece of Cody. Randy Orton tried to play peacemaker here. Randy Orton, of all people, trying to defuse the situation and calm things down. And in the end, all he did was get caught in the crossfire because Kevin Owens ended up laying out Randy Orton. This story here, I find more interesting than the Bloodline stuff. where is this going to go? I mean, you can kind of, in your mind, you can imagine with Randy Orton where this is going to ultimately lead. But we've got Survivor Series coming up. So there's a lot of questions as far as, you know, where that is going to go. But that, to me, was the most interesting of the stories they told on the show tonight. However, there was one moment that made me do a double take. And it came later in the show when Michael Cole, we had it on camera with the announcer sitting at the announce desk. And Michael Cole was talking about the whole Kevin Owens situation. And he accidentally called Kevin Owens Kevin Dunn. I don't even remember the last time Kevin Dunn's name would have been uttered on WWE television. He called him Kevin Dunn. I can think of no greater insult.
Fuck Kevin Dunn.
I really can't. I mean, Michael Cole should do a formal apology to Kevin Owens. I mean, a handwritten note. He should buy him a gift. He should get down on bended knee and apologize to him for that. I mean, you could call somebody so many different four-letter words. You could insult them in all kinds of ways. You can call them an asshole. You can call them a shithead. You can call them a fuckface. Right, all the different insults. But I don't know that any of them would sting quite as much as calling someone Kevin Dunn. So I was not expecting that, and I'm sure Kevin Owens was not either. The other thing we got tonight was the confirmation. They told you without telling you that the Motor City Machine Guns are on their way to SmackDown, and they're coming next week. There was some talk earlier today. I forgot where I saw it, but there was some talk earlier about maybe they would debut on the 25th, which is going to be at the Barclays Center here in Brooklyn. But no, it's happening next week. Not only did we get a tease from Nick Aldis, who made a match with Angel and Humberto for next week, and he said it's a new team I'm bringing in. Didn't tell us who it is. But we got another one of those vignettes, and this time, if you watch really close, you could see the initials MCMG. So they're coming. They're coming next week. And as we did with Cody showing up on Raw Monday night, remember he was there on Raw Monday. He didn't really do anything other than come out at the very end of the show to just confront Gunther because they're going to be on opposing sides at Crown Jewel, wrestling for this new Crown Jewel championship that they have created. But as with that, tonight we had more brand mixing where we had the women's world champion from Raw, Liv Morgan, Dominic Mysterio, Raquel Rodriguez. They were on the show tonight. This is all to build to Crown Jewel. Everything that they would do typically in advance of Survivor Series when they were still doing Raw versus SmackDown, now they're going to do it for Crown Jewel. So over these next 4 weeks, you're going to see, or 3 weeks, whatever it is, you're going to see a lot more of this back and forth between the two brands. Rhea Ripley also made a surprise appearance on the show tonight. In-ring-wise, Raw was the better of the two shows. And I didn't like Raw very much, but in-ring-wise, you had Gunther and Sami Zayn, you had the Donnybrook match between Sheamus and Pete Dunne. So I have to give the edge to Raw this week as far as matches. There was nothing on this show in-ring that could touch, you know, that stuff from Monday. But it was a better SmackDown than what we've been getting of late. That was largely really centered around the stuff with Owens and Cody and Orton, though. You take that out of the picture. I'm not as rosy about this show tonight. It was fine. It was solid. But to me, that really was the segment or the segments and the story that carried the show. So it was a step up from what we've been getting on Friday nights, which isn't saying much because I don't think we've been getting much from this show now for a while, for a good part of the summer, frankly. Into the beginning of the fall, but I did think it was better than a lot of the SmackDown episodes we've had recently. In-ring-wise, though, I got to go with the show on Monday. But this is your Friday Night SmackDown review. It is October 11th, 2024. After recapping the events of Bad Blood, including The Rock making his return, basically saying hi and then bye, and who the hell knows when we're going to see him again, after showing us all of that, Jimmy Uso was out first to open the show. He made his way out to a big babyface reaction. And it really hit me, you know, listening to his music. Both Usos have some pretty good entrance music. And I've said this before. I'm telling you, if you are Samoan or you are a Joshi, you're usually in pretty good shape. Def Rebel has done well by you. Unfortunately, if you're almost anybody else in this company, they have dropped the ball. But if you're part of those two groups, typically they did a pretty bang-on job with the music. It's everybody else that's the problem. So Jimmy said that he was out of action for 6 months, being put on the shelf by his little brother, Solo Sikoa. Jimmy said that Solo didn't have the balls to do it to his face. He got jumped from behind by Solo and his bloodline. Tonight, it's going to be Big Bro versus Little Bro, and he would do what he's done his entire life by kicking Solo's ass. Is it Carlos's birthday in the chat? Happy birthday, Carlos. I hope you had a great birthday. I hope you're not a Padres fan. Happy birthday. Jimmy was interrupted by Roman's theme music, and out came Roman Reigns, who we should be seeing more often on these shows going forward. They added a bunch of dates for him. I think a lot of them were really in November, so he may not be on the show every single week, but we are going to be seeing a lot more of Roman Reigns heading into Survivor Series. Roman hits the ring. He says that he's going to change things up a little bit tonight. He asked the crowd in Greenville, "Join me and acknowledge him. Big Jim." So it wasn't that they should acknowledge Roman. They should acknowledge Jimmy Uso. And Jimmy looked as surprised as anybody when Roman said this. Roman told him he's not an older brother, he being Roman. He's not an older brother, so he doesn't understand the whole revenge thing. And he says he's not a wise man yet. He doesn't come up with the manipulative schemes. He's a tribal chief, and that means that he takes what's his. And for 4 years now, that's exactly what they've done. They took what was theirs. They had it all, the money, the power, the respect, the championships. Everybody feared them. Said he doesn't like where they are right now. He doesn't like his position. He told us that he's the greatest of all time, and he meant it. And when they step into these arenas, he wants us to know that the goats are here. When they put those ones up in the air, he wants us to know that they are the ones. And Jimmy said, "Yeah, but we're not, though." And the crowd chanted, "Yes, you are." To which Jimmy asked them, "How?" Said he sees Roman with no Ulafala around his neck. He's a chief with no tribe. At Bad Blood, he came back because Roman needed him. He said, "We need help." Crowd yeeted, and Jimmy said that he knows one person they can get some help from, and again, the crowd yeeted, and Roman looked at Jimmy, and he said, "No yeet." So Jimmy said Roman will always be his tribal chief, but he's the only one in the family that still acknowledges him, which is true. Jimmy is the only one who still sucks up to Roman. And with that, Jimmy left. They played his music, and he left Roman with something to ponder. So they are, in fact, getting the band back together. Roman said no, but clearly Jimmy is going to try to get Jey Uso back in the fold. And if they're going to do a War Games match, which one would have to assume that's what this is building to, then they're probably going to bring Sami Zayn along for the ride as well. I mean, as things stand right now, you've got Solo and Jacob and the Tongans on one side. That's four. And it doesn't look like Solo is going to get bounced out of his bloodline anytime soon, even though I made the point in the Bad Blood review. I said, you know, for a guy who took over this whole bloodline thing because losing has consequences, you know, winning and losing, very important. This is a guy who has lost and lost and lost going back to SummerSlam, and yet there seemingly are no consequences for Solo Sikoa. At some point, there need to be consequences for him, but that's not going to happen before Survivor Series. So you got four of them on one side. You need four on the other side. You got Roman. You got Jimmy. Of course, they're going to eventually bring in Jay. There's going to be a fourth spot. Cody's doing his own thing now with Randy and KO. That only leaves Sami Zayn. Who else is there? Who else would be on their side? The Rock is not going to be there. For the fucking Rock. Please, we may not see him again until God knows when. If we're lucky, we'll see him maybe that first Raw on Netflix. He'll pop up, right? We'll feel the mana. He'll bring the mana, right? He'll be hitting his fucking arm going like this. Feel the mana. Yeah, next year, 2025. We're not getting him a Survivor Series. So Sami Zayn is the only one that matters. he'll probably come along for the ride, too. He already lost to Gunther on Monday. It's not like he's got a whole lot going on. But I've been saying, you know, if they're going to do this, if they're going to bring Jey Uso into the fold here, it shouldn't be easy. You know, he shouldn't be so quick to want to get back together with these guys for all the shit that they put him through. And how hard it was for him to finally break away and separate himself from the family and break out on his own. And he's done that, and he's gotten over, he stayed over, and he's become a champion now for the first time in his career, a singles champion. So it shouldn't be a case where it takes a week or two to get Jey to come around and then he joins the bloodline. This is something that they need to play out over a series of weeks. And you had Roman, and it looks like that's what they're going to do, because you had Roman in this segment, flat out telling Jimmy, no yeet. So Roman is not on board with bringing Jey back, but Jimmy is. So Jimmy is going to have to convince both of them. He's going to have to convince Jey, and then he's going to have to convince Roman that this is what we need. This is the right idea. He's going to have to try to broker a peace or a truce and play peacemaker between them, which I think could make for some great television. But you had to start it now, because before you know it, Survivor Series is going to be here. You know, it's next month. So I think we could get some really good TV out of it, but you got to have that tension. That's the key to all this. You want to make this interesting. You got to have that tension. This segment that we had at the beginning of the show here with Roman and Jimmy was the first time that we have had a Bloodline segment in many, many months. I mean, go back to the beginning of the year when Rock was here. That really felt like a Bloodline segment. And this was by no means a great segment. This would not even crack the top 30 of Bloodline segments that we've gotten in the last 4 years. But this is the first time where it felt like, all right, we're getting back to basics here. And hopefully things will really start to pick up with this story. We had LA Knight defending the United States Championship against Carmelo Hayes. Corey Graves said that Hayes told him if he wins, that he plans to bring back the old John Cena spinner version of the U.S. title, which should be enough to automatically disqualify Carmelo Hayes from ever holding the United States Championship. Belts should not spin. Before a commercial break, Andrade showed up at ringside in the timekeeper's area, which got LA Knight's attention, and he warned him to keep his distance. After the break, Andrade was sitting at ringside watching the match. Knight tried for a BFT. Hayes, though, countered out of it by doing a handstand, and then he pushed himself back to his feet and then hit an axe kick. And then a pop-up cutter for a near fall. Hayes went to the top rope. Andrade stood up out of his seat, which very briefly caught Melo's attention, but he proceeded anyway. He went for nothing but net. Knight moved out of the way. They traded some spots until Knight finally dropped him with a BFT. And Hayes took the bump on his head that we saw him do it last week at the end of the match between AJ and Hayes when Knight got in the ring. And he took the bump right on top of his head. And Knight pinned him to retain the title. By the way, the update on AJ Styles, since we talked about it on the podcast last week, is it a work? Is it not a work? It was very strange the way the whole thing played out. Evidently, the story of the match may have been scheduled to include AJ feigning an injury, but he did suffer an injury. And it sounds like a ligament sprain in his foot. He's still, I guess, waiting results of an MRI. So we don't know how serious the injury is, but he is hurt. And he wasn't happy about it. And I wouldn't be happy about it either if I were him, because he just came back. This was his first match back since June last week. And apparently they're starting a storyline with him where he is going to be going on a retirement tour of his own. I don't know exactly what the story is going to be beyond that he feels either he wants to wrap up, or he can't do this anymore, or he feels like he's in the twilight of his career. They're going to go for sympathy. I don't know how they're going to play it out. I assume they're still going to do it. We don't know, though, how long AJ may be out for. Hopefully it's not a long time. You know, if it's a sprain and not a tear, I mean, that's a big difference there. But boy, you talk about shitty timing. This is a guy who just came back, was starting a new story, and his first night in, just a weird injury, no less. I'd be frustrated too if I were him. And it sucks because they could really use him. Either show. I mean, I've been advocating moving Drew to Fridays and AJ to Mondays, but whatever show you have him on, they could really use an AJ Styles right now. So hopefully they get him back quickly. But as far as this match here, again, Knight retains. I think the idea was that Andrade standing up out of his chair was supposed to be, it was supposed to distract Carmelo Hayes enough that he can now go and, I mean, as we saw in the back with him later talking to Nick Aldis, you know, blaming Andrade for the law. That's the reason why I lost, because, you know, I was distracted by him on the outside. It's a little bit of a stretch. Wasn't that much of a distraction, really, but it also means that we're going to get another match very soon, which I'll get to here in a little bit, and that I don't have an issue with at all.
I love you, Solo! You are my tribal chief!
Tribal chief is here. Thank you, Uffman. The only tribal chief you need, the only Solo you need, it's not the one in the main event tonight, it's the one that's sitting here right in front of your face. Because unlike him, I deliver every single week. Even though Meltzer only gives me 4 3/4 stars, that prick. I never got a 5-star rating from Meltzer. You believe that? Highest he's ever given me is 4.75. I don't know what I have to do to get the 5. What do I have to do? Do I have to come on here in a tank top, you know, show the guns? What do I got to do here? In the back, Big Jim ran into Cody Rhodes, who thanked him for his help on Saturday. Jimmy told him to consider it a favor, but don't expect more of those. Cody warned Jimmy, hey, you know, Solo is not the same guy that he was when you left. It's been 6 months. And Jimmy called it family business. That's what he needs to handle tonight. Then they aired a quick video package to educate the audience as to who Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson are from NXT, because they've never been on SmackDown before, but they were on the show tonight challenging Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill for the women's tag team titles. So Jackson and Legend were in the middle of making their entrance, and they were interrupted when Kevin Owens appeared. Kevin Owens came out of the crowd and he rolled into the ring with a microphone, apologizing and saying he's not even supposed to be here tonight. But he was very upset that people said he turned on Cody Rhodes, right? You turned on Cody. When in reality, he said it was Cody who turned on him. And at that point, before he could even get those last few words out, they cut his microphone. Like he was CM Punk cutting the pipe bomb in 2011. They cut his mic. And you see they show the agents now being sent down to the ring to try to, you know, get him out of there. So when they cut his mic, he rolled out of the ring. He went over to the announce desk. He ripped the headset off of Corey Graves' head, put it on his. And he said that it was Cody who turned on him. Then he looked up and he noticed Cody Rhodes was walking out, and he was being held back as he's walking down the aisle, being held back by more producers and officials and security, and he was fixing for a fight. He was not happy after Owens put a beatdown on him outside of his bus on Saturday, right in front of Pharaoh. As if his dog is like on the side of the bus, that and the vodka ad that he promotes everywhere he rides. It's in his contract. His bus has to have the vodka, the Wheatley vodka ad on the side. I think Pharaoh is on the bus somewhere, like on the side of the bus. Maybe he was in the bus. I don't fucking know. Pharaoh's getting older. I think Pharaoh's like 13 or something. So I think his days on the road, I think, have come to an end. But anyway, security swarmed Cody to stop him from coming down to the ring. Randy Orton runs out. He also tries to restrain Cody. And Orton then gets into the ring. And he tries to find out what's going on with Owens. Owens gives him a shove, almost like, you know, get out of my way. And Orton drops him with a right hand, popped him right in the jaw. And Owens is holding his jaw and he's looking up at Orton, and he can't believe it. You know, he can't believe that Orton actually took a shot at him. Rolled out of the ring and he left. Orton's leaning up against the ropes and he's not happy either. You know, he's not happy about what he just did. You know, you keep pushing this man's buttons. Keep pushing Randy Orton's buttons, and you might trigger his IED. Remember the intermittent explosive disorder that he had many years ago? When he kicked Vince McMahon in the head? After he punted him in the skull? So I thought that this was well done. I thought this segment was well done. What they're doing here, it's different, the way that they're going about doing this, because they're really going all out, you know, into the whole, this is an internal matter, and we don't want to really talk about it. They didn't even show footage, which I question. I mean, I know what they're going for here, but I think that they should have shown footage of what happened, and they didn't do it because they don't want to condone it. They don't want people to know, you know, what happened if they didn't see it on social media. But if you didn't see it on social media, you would have no idea what the hell's even going on or what triggered it. Like, what? Bad blood? I saw bad blood. There was no Kevin Owens wasn't on bad blood. If you're not somebody who's constantly on social media, and I'm not even sure if they put anything up about it on WWE.com, I could see some people watching the show being a little confused. Like, how did we go from 0 to 60 like that? Like, why is Kevin Owens and Cody Rhodes, they're so angry at each other. They want to murder each other. Like, how did we get here? What happened here? So the fact they didn't replay the angle that they shot on social media, I thought was strange. Owens did not get a chance here in this segment to fully explain himself outside of him talking about how I didn't turn on Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes turned on me. We heard him say that. And we know why he's upset, right? We don't really need him to kind of spoon feed the whole thing to us because we know why. He was already upset a few weeks ago when he found out that Cody Rhodes was teaming with Roman Reigns at Bad Blood. The same Roman Reigns who has constantly cost Kevin Owens championship after championship after championship that he could have won from the Bloodline over the last 4 years. How many matches, pay-per-view matches, did Owens and you know, Roman Reigns have? Multiple. I think at least two, if not three, just in the last few years alone. And every single time, Kevin Owens had to contend with the Bloodline. And even recently, he and Orton have stuck their necks out for Cody Rhodes. They've been his friend, and they have been tortured and beaten and put through tables by the Bloodline at every turn. And now this man is going to turn around and agree to team with Roman Reigns. He feels betrayed. You know, for him, that's just a bridge too far. He can't forgive him for it. So he looks at it as a betrayal. I didn't turn on you. You turned on me. The minute you agreed to be this man's partner and have his back, you turned on us. All right? Him and Randy Orton. He doesn't know why he's the bad guy in all this. He thinks that he's right. Cody is wrong and he's right. And that's, I think, some of the best heels actually in wrestling. That's kind of how they are portrayed. That was Jericho back in 2008 when he had that great program with Shawn Michaels. Remember how that whole thing started, where Shawn was faking a knee injury, right? Not the first time he's done that. He was faking a knee injury. He was wrestling Batista or feuding with Batista. And Jericho knew he was a faker, and yet the people still cheered for him. They didn't care. And Jericho couldn't understand it. This man is lying to you. You know, he's not this righteous man. So then he took matters into his own hands, but he never looked at it as, I'm the bad guy here. He's like, you people are the bad people because I didn't do anything wrong. You're cheering for a cheat. Same concept here. Now, later in the show, I'll condense all of the related segments into this here instead of jumping around. Later in the show, yeah, Drew McIntyre, by the way. Drew McIntyre is another one. He's another one. Same thing. He doesn't feel he's done anything wrong. He's been telling us for months that CM Punk is a bad person, he's a liar, and he's a scoundrel and all this stuff, right? He doesn't look at it as, I did anything wrong. I didn't change. But yet you people come out here every week and you chant for this man and you chant his name. Right? Same thing. But later in the show, Nick Aldis, Randy Orton, and Cody Rhodes were outside next to Cody's bus. And Orton was trying to calm him down, telling him, get on the bus. I'm going to fix it. All right, I'm going to go pull Kevin. I'm going to go find Kevin, pull him aside, and have a conversation with him. I'm going to take care of it. I'm going to fix it. Just get on the bus. And interesting that Orton had the title. So all of a sudden, you see the WWE Championship is in his hand, and he hands it to Cody, and he kind of, you know, puts his hand on it. Again, a little subtle thing, because we've had little hints of this over the months in, like, backstage segments or in the ring where Randy Orton is eyeballing that title. This has been going on now. Little breadcrumbs have been dropped for a long time now. But he tells Cody, get on the bus. And Cody finally relents, and he gets on the bus. Aldis also told Cody, you got to focus on beating Gunther at Crown Jewel. So Cody gets on the bus. And Aldis looks at Randy Orton, and he smiles, and he goes, wow, Randy Orton, the voice of reason. Who would have thought? And then he walks off. See, my man is matured. This is a very different Randy Orton. I said in the NXT review, when Javon Evans over-rotated on that corkscrew dive and they fucked up the RKO spot at the end of their match on NXT, if this were 15 years ago, Randy Orton, I don't know what Randy Orton would have done. I mean, he would have probably dropped a bunch of fucking four-letter bombs in the ring, would have called him stupid like he did Kofi Kingston, and then probably would have blown up in the back. But that was the Randy Orton of 2009, right? The Randy Orton of 2024 is very different than the Randy Orton of 2009. He's older. He's got a bunch of kids now. He's mellowed out. And plus, the guy is set for life, right? I mean, please, give me a break. How many millions is he raking in every year? He's living the life of Riley over there. He's got nothing to be angry about. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You're out at the club, the drinks are flowing, you see a cute girl at the bar, you start up a conversation. One thing leads to another, you end up back at her place, and yada, 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 you wake up and you realize that you forgot to wrap it up. Congrats! Now you know what it feels like to go online without ExpressVPN. You might be fine, but you don't even know this girl's name. And there's all kinds of nasty consequences that you may have to pay for going without protection. Not the least of which is a little miniature version of yourself that poops and pees and cries all day. Is that what you want? I don't think so. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, in a restaurant, a hotel, an airport, it could be anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network can easily access and steal your bank login, your credit card details, and other sensitive information. Doesn't take much technical knowledge either. A 12-year-old could do it. Those same hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your data on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure tunnel between your device and the internet. Now, what makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is how easy it is to use. Just fire up the app, you click one button to get protected, and that's it. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. There's a reason why ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. Whenever I travel, like when I flew to Tampa in January and Chicago last month, I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app on my phone and my laptop because it gave me that peace of mind knowing that I was protected. It's important that I know my information is safe and secure, and ExpressVPN makes it so that I don't have to spend my time stressing out about it. You just set it and forget about it. I have plenty of other things to worry about without this being one of them. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster, and you can get an extra 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster. So then there was one more segment later in the show. Nick Aldis was in the back. He was talking to the Street Profits, and he was talking to Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, who still want a challenge for the tag team titles, even though they're a bunch of losers and they've lost multiple times now. So they're arguing. They're literally just yelling at each other back and forth. You cannot understand a word they're saying. Aldis is standing there, and it felt like, what is going on here? This segment was just them standing there screaming at each other for a good 15 to 20 seconds, nonstop. Until finally, Aldis, he's kind of looking like he sees something off camera, and he goes, oh, I got to go. And he leaves. And that took way too long to get to that point. But what he saw was outside in the parking lot, Kevin Owens was standing over Randy Orton and he was kicking the shit out of him. So all this is calling for help, calling for security. Owens is yelling down at Randy saying, "You want to pick sides, eh? You picked the wrong side." And they finally, he left Orton laying and they were able to escort Owens away. So there was a lot going on as far as this story goes. This was the strongest part, really, of the entire show, was all these different segments involving these three. Now the question is, where do we go from here? We know that Cody Rhodes is wrestling Gunther at Crown Jewel. We know that the WWE title is not on the line. The Crown Jewel Championship is going to be decided upon, which, who gives a shit? You know, it's a fucking trophy belt. We're not going to see it again until next November. Who cares? But they're going to have their match. And I still feel, I said this the other night on TNT, I still feel like, you know, Gunther, still 3 weeks away, but Gunther is my favorite to win the match. And I think that Kevin Owens gets involved. And Kevin Owens plays a role in Cody Rhodes losing at Crown Jewel. And then coming out of Crown Jewel, now we're heading into Survivor Series, and we get Cody Rhodes against Kevin Owens for the WWE Championship. We never did get a rematch between them, right? They had their match in Berlin, and Cody won, and we never did get a rematch between them. Now Owens is, you know, the bad guy, and them doing a rematch for the title makes sense, but here's my other question. Does Randy Orton get involved, end up getting involved to make it a triple threat match? Because if not, it would be strange. Randy Orton would have no other obvious role on the card at Survivor Series, which is an event traditionally Randy Orton is actually Mr. Survivor Series. You know, he's got a lot of history at the event. He's been a part of a lot of different Survivor Series shows and elimination matches. And he's one of their biggest stars, so why wouldn't he be on that show? If he's not wrestling, maybe he ends up in a role similar to the one that Seth Rollins had at SummerSlam, where he was the guest referee for the CM Punk Drew McIntyre match. Maybe he's a referee. Maybe he's in at ringside for it, but he's got to be involved. So instead of just doing a straight singles rematch between Cody and KO, and we saw Owens attack Orton, so now Orton's going to have beef with Owens. Maybe we're going to get a triple threat match with all three for the championship on that show. Because again, what else would Randy Orton or Kevin Owens be doing if not something involving Cody Rhodes? So I think that's probably where we're headed for Survivor Series. And, you know, again, The Rock being on WrestleMania or not being on WrestleMania is going to play a very important role in the direction that Cody's story takes heading into next year. I would hope that he has given WWE and, you know, Triple H a heads up on, okay, I can do the show or I can't do the show. I'm in, I'm out. See, I feel like this is going to be like Redux from a year ago, where we're going to be hearing all these stories about The Rock. Will he, won't he? And then we all know how things played out at the beginning of this year and where that almost went. It's like, you got to give these people a sense of whether or not you're in or you're out, because they've got to plan this shit out. And the last thing as a fan that I want to hear about a year later after the shit that went down at the beginning of this year is that, well, The Rock, it wasn't supposed to be on the show, but now he is, and plans have changed. And I mean, we don't need to go through that shit again. They got to lock their plans in here. This affects other people. This doesn't just affect Cody. It affects people like Randy Orton. So I would certainly hope whatever The Rock is doing or not doing, that they know now, instead of waiting until January or February when this guy comes in and just blows everything to smithereens again. Whether or not he's on that show is going to affect, I think, the direction of these stories and whether or not they feel comfortable taking the title off of Cody, possibly, in advance of WrestleMania. Because that's an idea that I've been in favor of. You know, if he's not going to work The Rock, I don't have an issue with them putting the title on Randy Orton. Whether it's Survivor Series, whether it's Saturday night's main event, and then maybe having Cody chase to get the belt back from Orton at WrestleMania. Like, I think that's an option I'd be okay with. It's not the only option that I would consider, but I'd be okay with that. But this idea that, well, we can't do that because, you know, he can't lose the belt before he wrestles The Rock, and, you know, we don't know what The Rock is going to be doing. I mean, at that point, it's like, you know, fuck The Rock. Like, come on, man. There are other stories that you could be telling here. I just don't want him to hold everything up and hold everything hostage again. So I would certainly hope that he's given them a heads up on whether or not he can do the show. We had Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill. We did finally get the match with them defending the women's tag team titles against Jakara Jackson and Lash Legend from NXT. If you were interested to see what these two ladies look like, if you're not really familiar with their work, if you don't watch NXT, you still don't know too much about them because they didn't give you much here in this match. Chelsea Green and Piper Niven were ringside. They were watching and they were still selling that Chelsea smelled like shit after losing the dumpster match last week to Meechin. Legend and Jackson, they hit a facebuster combo on Bianca. Later on, outside the ring, Lash Legend booted Chelsea Green clear over the announce desk. And Michael Cole started making gagging noises. Because you see, Chelsea smelled really bad because she hasn't showered all week. Or she has, but it's like she was sprayed by a skunk, so it didn't work. You know what they say, if you ever get sprayed by a skunk, you got to lay in a bathtub and you have to bathe in tomato juice. Is it tomato juice or tomato sauce? I would think it's tomato juice. I'm going to cook up a batch of your grandmother's tomato sauce. And then pour it in the bathtub and then lay in it. But that's something I had heard a long time ago, like tomato juice, and you can get rid of the stench. I've never been sprayed by a skunk. Hopefully I never will be. I'm sorry, you know, walking down the streets of Brooklyn, I don't see the Brooklyn skunk. So I haven't run into one. Although we do have possums. There are Brooklyn possums that sometimes you'll see around. Maybe that's an old wives' tale, though. I don't know. So Bianca got a hot tag to Jade, which is the spot they go to now in all of their matches, and they do it because it works, gets a reaction every single time. So Jade comes in and she runs wild. Champions won with their combo finish. Jade ended up pinning Jakara Jackson. Juice, I'm being told. Okay, see? So tomato juice, not tomato sauce. You see big rats, big-ass rats. Well, yeah, of course, you got big-ass rats in New York. Absolutely. Rats and mice and roaches. Silverfish. Flies. Mosquitoes. Got a little bit of everything here, but no skunks. As far as this match did nothing for Lash Legend or Jakara Jackson. Nothing. You know why? Because it went 2 minutes. And unless you're Bill Goldberg on Nitro in 1998, you're not going to get over in a two-minute match. It's just not going to happen. Now, they got a couple of offensive moves in, but that's about it. I don't see what's accomplished, frankly, when you do a match like this and you give them 2 minutes. And it's even worse when it's two people that the audience, by and large, on SmackDown probably has no familiarity with. They don't know who these two women are. Now, they did air a video package beforehand to try to educate you about who they are, but two-minute match is not going to get anybody over. I'm sorry. But they did this. It was a win, kind of a warm-up of sorts for Bianca and Jade because they're going to be defending their titles on Monday against Damage Control. And I also assume that what they did here, especially with Lash booting Chelsea over the table, is they're setting up a match probably for NXT next week. With Chelsea Green and Piper Niven taking on Lash Legend and Jakara Jackson. So I assume you'll get that match on NXT probably next week. We had Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton. Shout out to Insight Docs. Perhaps he is subscriber number 82,000. I don't know. I haven't checked. I don't know if we'll hit it tonight. You never know. You may be the lucky subscriber. Sid says, I prefer to bathe in a tangy marinara. You put any spices in there, maybe? Some oregano or something?
Yee!
Yee. Thank you, Jeremy. So Nia and Tiffany came to the ring. Nia said that Bayley put up one hell of a fight at Bad Blood, even though she lost. She started to get the what treatment from the crowd. She said that nobody on the planet could beat her, especially Liv Morgan. Because you see, I say fly, and there's literally a fly in the room now. As soon as I said the word fly, there's a fucking fly flying around. It's like, you can't possibly be serious right now. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. They're everywhere. They are everywhere. Amazing. But you see, the reason that Nia is referring to Liv Morgan is because of this whole crown jewel thing. They're going to be wrestling each other in Saudi Arabia. So Nia said that she will annihilate Morgan and become the first ever crown jewel champion. And then Nia did something very strange. She grabbed Tiffany Stratton out of nowhere in a headlock. And she started screaming, but you could see the fans in the background started to raise up because they thought she was turning on her. They thought she was attacking Tiffany Stratton. But she just grabbed her in a headlock, and she just started acting weird and was shouting, then it'll be Tiffy time. Because after she beats Liv Morgan, Tiffany can then go and cash in her money in the bank on Liv Morgan and not her. In case you were wondering why we're getting this match, because it's a very strange match. You're doing heel against heel at Crown Jewel for that new championship. Liv Morgan against Nia Jax. That's not a very attractive match on paper. Liv Morgan against Nia Jax. Why? This is why. It's all about Tiffany Stratton. It's not even about the match. It's about Tiffany. Will she or won't she? Which champion is she going to cash in on? Probably neither one. But which of the two is she going to cash in money in the bank on? That's the entire story of the match. So Naomi made her entrance and said, they all know the only reason Nia is still champion is because the broke down Barbie helped, referring to Stratton. Naomi entered the ring and Jack said that it took two to pin her last time, referring to her match with Naomi and Bayley. Naomi said that she doesn't need anybody to help her beat Nia. She could beat her right here and right now. So Nia asked for a referee. Referee ran down. It looked like we were about to get a match. We heard Liv Morgan's music. Out she comes with Dirty Dom and Raquel Rodriguez. Raquel Rodriguez led the charge. And then coming up the rear, we had Liv and Dom walk out on stage. Liv says that they came to make an example out of Nia. But instead, they're going to go to ringside and they're going to watch. They're going to watch her lose to Naomi. So they went to a break. They come back. The match is joined in progress. Late in the match, Naomi hopped on top of the barricade outside. Jax caught her, though, hit a Samoan drop on the floor. Nia then got up into Liv and Dom's face at ringside before they cut to another break. Show came back. Nia had control until she missed a senton. Naomi followed with a running bulldog into the middle turnbuckle. Then she landed a crossbody from the top. Only got a near fall out of it. Naomi hit a springboard kick to the head and then landed a corkscrew plancha on Jax on the outside. Tiffany Stratton, at this point, tries to sneak attack Naomi. Raquel Rodriguez, though, stops her, and Naomi ends up kicking Tiffany. Naomi goes to the top. Nia cuts her off. And now she's setting up for her finish, the Annihilator. Raquel distracts the referee. Liv Morgan takes Tiffany's briefcase and hits Nia with it a couple of times while Nia is on the ropes. From there, Naomi slips underneath Nia, power bombs her out of the corner, stacks her, and gets the 1-2-3. Now, Naomi was on the verge of losing this match were it not for the assist from Liv Morgan, so she was surely going to lose. But she still pinned the champion, which I normally hate, and I can't say I was thrilled to see it here either, although I'm kind of indifferent, to be honest with you, as far as she pinned Nia Jax, like, okay, whatever. But if you pin the champion, you got to get a title shot. I don't know if they're going to give Naomi a title match or not, but Naomi now has wins over both Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton. So you would hope that that's going to lead to something. But she also gave Nia one of her better matches. Now, Nia, you know, the match that she had, I want to say it was the first Raw of the year with Becky Lynch, was a really good match. The match at Elimination Chamber with Rhea was also, I think, a good match. She's had a few good ones this year. She's also had some duds. This was not a dud. I thought that they actually had a good match. Now, Rhea Ripley's music hit. Another Raw star showing up on SmackDown. As Liv and Dom were exiting, they hit her music. Ripley came out and attacked Raquel. Morgan retreated into the ring but ran right into a waiting Nia Jax. Rhea got in the ring, took out Nia before Nia could do anything to Liv, and then she took Liv down to the canvas. Liv was able to escape, though, when Dom briefly distracted Rhea. And Ripley was super over. I mean, she was more over than anybody else in this segment. But not only was the champion pinned here on this show, but Nia, after the match was over, got taken out by Rhea Ripley, who wasn't even on SmackDown. She got laid out, never got her revenge. Not a good night to be the SmackDown Women's Champion. In the back, Carmelo Hayes had an ice pack on his head, and he wanted Nick Aldis to tell him why, after he beat AJ Styles last week, fair and square, why Andrade would be out there to ruin his U.S. title match. Why would you allow this? Aldis pointed out that Melo and Andrade, you know, you guys are tied. 3 wins apiece. So there's only one solution, he said. Game 7. Game 7. Here's hoping that it doesn't go to a Game 7 between the Mets and the Dodgers, and we make short work of Ohtani and his crew next week. We're coming for you. We're coming for you. You know, there's still a lot of people who are very upset that the Dodgers left Brooklyn to go out west. Have not forgiven them for that. We're going to get some revenge. It's going to be sweet. So there won't be a Game 7 there, but we're going to get a Game 7 here between Carmelo Hayes and Andrade. He said the winner of that might just find themselves in line for a U.S. title shot. He told Melo, don't miss. You know, we've already seen Andrade and Carmelo Hayes individually getting U.S. title matches with L.A. Knight, and they both lost, but we've already seen it. So I look at this and I say, how does this end? And because it just feels like the end result of this is going to be a triple threat match, right? You would think that all three would be involved. Did you not realize that was always my face in that gif on Tony Khan's head? Are you only first realizing that now? But yeah, I think a triple threat match is what we end up with, which would mean that this Game 7 that we're going to be getting between these two is very likely to end in a draw of some kind. It's just like if Andrade wins, right? Let's say he wins the best of 7. We've already seen Knight against Andrade. Melo wins. We just saw Melo and Andrade and Melo and Knight, and he got beat too. It would be underwhelming. Triple threat is the way to go. And then do the match at Crown Jewel. For fuck's sake, don't do the match on TV. Don't do the match on TV. These guys have been going out there, balls to the wall, having great matches every single week. They're going to have their 7th match. And that'll be on TV, I'm sure. But if you're building to a triple threat match for the U.S. title, these men deserve the chance to go out there commercial-free. No interruptions. Let them go out there. Let them show up. Let them show out. Do what they do best. Let them do it on a PLE, uninterrupted. Crown Jewel makes sense for that match. Santos Escobar showed up after Hayes walked away. He showed up with the rest of Legado del Fantasma to talk to Nick Aldis. He called him Nicholas. Nicholas. Said, Nicholas, why are Melo and Andrade, why does it seem like they have a permanent spot in the U.S. title picture? Aldis pointed out that Escobar had his own shot once and lost. And Escobar said, look, it's not just about me. He said, what about Elektra? What about Electra Lopez? What about Angel and Humberto? Aldis was glad he brought that up because he's got a match in mind for Los Garza, he said, next week. A team that he personally hand-selected. And if they can get past them, then back up a little bit here. Hold on. I forgot to mention one thing. I call them Angel and Humberto. Their actual team name, they've been using it for a little while now, is Los Garza. So just so there's no confusion, when I say Los Garza, I am referring to Angel and Humberto. Because that is how I will continue to refer to them, because that's who they are. And I'm not calling him Berto either. He's Humberto. So now that we've cleared that up, if Los Garza can get a win over this hand-selected team next week, they may well be in line for a shot at the tag team titles. So even before they aired the teaser vignette after this, clearly this was the setup for the debut of the Motor City Machine Guns. But then they did air another one of these Need for Speed vignettes, and the words next week are at the end of it. And not only does it say next week at the end of it, but if you look very closely, in the course of this vignette, they do show the words, the letters, MCMG. So the Machine Guns are coming, and they're coming to SmackDown next week. Naturally, of course, they're coming to SmackDown next week, because I will not be here next week, so there will be no stream next week. I will be at the House of Glory show. So I will have to wait until later in the evening to see the Motor City Machine Guns debut. But they will be on the show next week. And you know what the best part is about them flashing MCMG in that promo? It confirms something that we didn't know for sure. They're keeping the name. Unless they just call them MCMG and they don't actually call them Motor City Machine Guns, which I think would be ridiculous. But I mean, they did that with MSK, right? They were just MSK. Right? In NXT, Wesley and Nash Carter, they were MSK. What does MSK stand for? Fuck if I know. Hopefully they'll be the Motor City Machine Guns. It looks like they're keeping their name. I figured they were, but you know, with this company, you never know. You never know. The main event of this show was Jimmy Uso, one-on-one with Solo Sikoa. Will I review it the day after? I will review it on the podcast that Sunday. That is what I will be doing, most likely. Got to tune into the podcast to find out my thoughts. Hopefully they have a good debut. I hope they get a good reaction. Where is SmackDown next week, by the way? They're not in Detroit, I assume. I don't know where SmackDown is next week. And with the WWE audience, like the AEW audience, they would know who these men are. And you know that if they had gone to AEW, of course, they're going to get a great reaction coming out to the ring. In WWE, I do wonder, depending on what city they're in next week, what the reaction, what the response in the building is going to be. I really hope that they get a very positive reception to where people actually recognize them, like enough people in the building recognize who they are. Because these guys have never been on the main roster before. The closest thing, Alex Shelley did 2 matches, I think, with Kushida as his partner in NXT, and that was years ago. He's never been on the main roster. Chris Sabin has never been on the main roster. They've not been, you know, there's a lot of WWE fans that don't watch TNA. They don't even know what it is. So I'm curious more about what the reaction is. I'm not even worried about the match. It could be a great match if they give them time. Sabin and Shelley against Angel and Humberto, that should be a fucking kick-ass match next week. But what's the reaction to them? That's what I really want to know. They're in Columbia, South Carolina. All right. Eh. I guess we'll see. I have no idea what that's... I don't know what that's going to mean as far as a reaction, but they'll be in Columbia next week, so we'll find out. Solo Sikoa and Jimmy Uso. Jimmy sent Solo out to the floor and then hit him with a suicide dive. Rolled him back inside. Then he went up top and dove at Solo, who struck him on the way down, and then Solo told him, "I'm not little anymore." Yeah, I could tell. He's not a small man. So he's telling his brother, "I'm not little anymore." And while the referee was scolding Solo for something, Jacob Fatu hit Jimmy with a cheap shot from the floor. Jimmy battled back. Solo, though, knocked him back to the floor and then fought to put Jimmy down at ringside. That took us into the final picture-in-picture break of this match. After the break, Solo was in control, and he was yelling at him, "Is this all you got? Is this all you got?" It's like The Rock at WrestleMania with Cody. "Look at you now. Look at you now, boy. Mama Rhodes. Look at you now." I'll never forget that segment on Raw where he was beating up Cody in the back, and then he beat him outside. Boy, what is the deal, by the way, with Cody getting his ass kicked in the parking lot outside of his bus? I just realized The Rock did the same thing, and so did Kevin Owens. But I'll never forget that segment on Raw. I lost count of how many times Rock said, "Look at you now. Look at you now." If you did a drinking game to it, you'd be dead. Look at you now. Are we closing in? I think we're closing in on the likes goal, by the way. Get those likes up. We're awfully close. Awfully close to the goal. Do I still have it here? Let me see. I did have that. I think I got rid of it. I did have the sound effect. No, that's Tama Tonga. That's the wrong one. I got rid of it. Look at you now. So Solo's in control after the break. Running hip attack in the corner connects. Solo tries for another one, but he eats a super kick. And he got Solo stunned down in the corner. Jimmy charges in, but he gets launched over and lands on the apron. Jimmy comes off the top with a crossbody, got the lateral press, only got a two count, though. Everyone's like, "What the fuck? What the fuck was that?" That was Tama Tonga. Can't tell you what the hell he's supposed to be doing. But yeah, that's right. Don't feed the bloodline after midnight. Those are the rules. You can't feed them after midnight. If you feed them after midnight, that's what happens. Fatu, though, gets back up on the apron. Jimmy knocks him down. Same with Tama Tonga. Same with Tongaloa. Solo goes up for the Samoan spike off of the distraction, but he gets blocked. And Jimmy hits a Samoan drop of his own for two. Jimmy heads up top. Tama Tonga distracts the referee on one side, which allows Jacob Fatu to trip Jimmy on top. And then Solo finally connects on the Samoan spike, and he pins his big bro. After the match, the bloodline pounces on Jimmy when Roman's music hit, and out comes Roman Reigns. Superman punch to Jacob Fatu in the aisle. He dumps Tama Tonga out of the ring. Superman punch to Tongaloa. And now he comes face to face with Solo Sikoa. They start going at it. Jacob Fatu almost immediately hits the ring and nails Roman from behind. And then there's the corner hip attack to Roman. Jimmy is back up. He goes after Jacob, but that's a bad idea. He gets put down, and Fatu hits the double jump moonsault. So the Tongans grab a hold of Roman for Solo. They're holding him. And Solo Sikoa delivers a Samoan spike to Roman Reigns. And the Wish bloodline stands tall to end things tonight. You know, they're driving home the idea that Jimmy was right when he told Roman at the beginning of the show, and he said it to him again here at the end. We need help. We need help. They're outgunned. They're outmanned. 4-2. Those odds are not good. They need help. And we know who that help is going to be. In fact, I would expect to see Jimmy Uso on Raw this Monday to start that, you know, that phase of the story here where he is trying to get back in the good graces of his brother and trying to say, "Look, we need you. We need help." And Jay's answer should, in so many words, be "fuck off." And then Jimmy keeps trying week after week. You know, maybe we get some segments with Sammy and Jay having conversations in the back, you know, having a heart-to-heart about this whole family situation. And again, there's a lot of material there. You know, they can really make this interesting. Take your time with it. There's still time, you know, to make this rock solid and get the teams where they need to be in advance of War Games. I just was thinking, though, up until a few weeks ago, like, boy, you know, Survivor Series is not that far away, and there's just been nothing. There's been no movement whatsoever as far as Jay and the Bloodline, so maybe they're not going to do it. Obviously, they are. But that's what I'm looking forward to. Take your time with it. Build that tension. It can't just be as simple as 2 weeks later, Jay says, okay, I'm back. Yeet. Like, no, that's fucking lazy. You can't do that. You got how many weeks between now and Survivor Series, right? Play it out. Play it out to full effect, and the payoff will be that much sweeter when we eventually get it. But also, this was yet another tired Bloodline beatdown here. How many times have we seen SmackDown close with this? And I know why they did it. Yeah, obviously, the band is getting back together. It's going to get a great reaction when we eventually get it. But because we've seen this so many times already, it just ends these shows on such a sour note because it's just so played out, you know, and just very dull. So I really hope we don't get too many more of these Bloodline beatdown closes to these shows, because we've already had an endless supply of these. I don't know how many more of these I can take. But no Rock follow-up on the show tonight for anybody who thought he might be there. Not even a mention by Jimmy or Roman in the opening promo, which I thought was strange. But if he's not going to be around, then there's no point in them mentioning him. Clearly, he's not going to be around for a while. I don't know why he was even there at Bad Blood. At some point, maybe it'll make sense, but honestly, I don't know why he was there. Why did Rock need to be on that show? Were it not for that, CM Punk and Drew McIntyre probably would have main evented Bad Blood. And it's like, well, The Rock is going to be there. All right, well, then obviously you have to close with The Rock. But what was the point? I mean, it's just to remind us that he's still there. I think we already knew. Just to get people talking, generate social media buzz. Okay, mission accomplished, but I fail to see why he even needed to be on that show. As far as this show goes, we got some good story progression tonight for the two main angles. Everything else, I think, was solid, if unspectacular, but it was a step up from the usual. From what we've been getting on SmackDown. Hopefully they can build on this. What did you think about SmackDown for October 11th? The poll says 68.4% thumbs up, 21% thumbs in the middle, and 10.5% thumbs down. That is the score so far for tonight's show. At Solomonster, chime in. Chime in and vote. Let me know what you think. The Rock is becoming Hogan. Now, he's got a lot more lying that he has to do in his interviews before he can catch up to Hogan. Now, you know, the difference between Rock and Hogan, Hogan is just genuinely not a good person. He's just not. You could say a lot of things about The Rock. You could say that, you know, he's full of himself or tone deaf on certain things. I know he got blasted for the Maui stuff last year. I don't look at Rock and think, man, that's just a terrible human being. He's a bad person. That's the difference between them. Let's take a look at your super chats here. Thank you for the support thus far. Shout out to, let's see, who are we starting with here? Shout out to The Real CS, yes, who dropped a pair of super chats here before I went live tonight. Says, I think Tony Khan keeping guys like Ricky Starks and the Lucha Bros, all who clearly don't want to be there, under contract is a bad thing because it creates more unnecessary drama for AEW. I think it has the potential to cause drama. I don't think it's causing drama yet as much as it's just a bad look, you know, because you'll have Ricky Starks come out and say, no, I'm not injured. People saying, well, are you hurt? Why are you not on TV? Nope. I'm not hurt. And I wish I could be on TV, like kind of tap dancing around. You know, he wants to say more, but he's restraining himself. Lucha Bros have been very quiet of late. It's always possible that if they keep their mouth shut, Tony may have a change of heart and let them go sooner, but as things stand, they're going to be there for another year. So it's not so much that it's causing drama as much as it's just, it's a bad look for Tony. And if these people don't want to be there and you're not going to use them, I just don't see the point in holding on to them and continuing to pay them. I'm sure they're being paid very well. And continue to pay them and not get any return on your investment. That's the thing that just makes me shake my head. Maybe soon we'll see them used to job on TV to other people, but like he could have had Ricky Starks on TV doing jobs months ago. He just benched him. He's not using him at all. You're just wasting money. I just don't understand it. You're wasting money. Same thing with the Lucha Bros. So far, he's not using them. He hasn't used them on TV in at least 2 months. Doesn't look like he's going to. You're paying them. Use them or lose them. I just don't understand this whole, I'm going to bench you and you're going to waste a year of your career. And someone like Penta, he's either 40 or about to turn 40. It's not like he's that young anymore. So the idea of him sitting at home for 6 months or a year, it's a career killer because it just stops you in your tracks. Now with AEW, you can work independent promotions. It's not like they can't work, but it's very clear these guys want to go to WWE. And again, my whole thing is just like, use them, or if not, then let them go. It's as simple as that. They signed a contract, yes, but they signed a contract to work. If you're not going to put them to work and use them, then get rid of them. He also says, just give them their release, and if he's so worried about them going to WWE, give them a non-compete clause or something. Well, you can't do that anymore. No more non-competes. It won't be enforceable. Sidro dropping a $5 super chat. Aldis says a new tag team next week. A new tag team, part of the machine that will be gunning for Legado. Hashtag sorry I had to. No, you really didn't, actually. You didn't have to, but you did anyway. Base Beerus can't spell glow without GWO. Damn straight. Where's all my Green World Order members at? In the chat. Also, only Bloodhunter can stop the bloodline. Yeah, right. Fuck the Bloodhunter. Roka Thriller. I hope the AEW main event tomorrow night ends in a DQ because Moxley should not be the guy to end Danielson's reign. It should be Darby Allin. Well, boy, that would be a shitty way for the pay-per-view main event to end on a disqualification. I sure hope that doesn't happen. I don't disagree with you, but they've committed to it. You can't do a DQ finish. That would suck. That would absolutely suck. They made the wrong choice. I agree. Yeah, I wanted to see Brian and Darby too. They chose to go in a different direction. And I don't think Brian is winning, and when he loses, that's it. He's done. So they had the chance to do it. They screwed the pooch. They chose not to. Jerome Eugenio, what a way to build champion against champion by having one of the champions in Nia lose like a geek. Champs are chumps. Well, unless your name is Gunther, then Gunther or Roman Reigns, then you can't call them chumps. But if you're anybody else, then yes, I agree. Retro KOH. I was wrong about Owens being a red herring, but this whole Orton being the voice of reason can't be legit. He is the mastermind. I don't know that he's the mastermind. Sometimes people like to think that these stories are deeper than they really are. I mean, it's not like we've got Scorsese writing storylines here for WWE. I think it's a case where Orton is just going to be pushed and pushed and pushed to the brink, and he's going to snap. And when he does, that RKO will hit like crack. I don't think you really need to overcomplicate it and say, oh, it's a conspiracy. They're in on it together. Is it possible? Sure, it's possible, but I also think that sometimes it's just staring you right in the face and you don't have to look too much deeper than that. eventually he will be pushed over the edge and he'll snap and he'll react accordingly. Base Beerus with the jack-o'-lanterns. Happy Halloween, brother. My favorite time of year. How was that Saw movie, by the way? The one that came out with Chris Rock? The Book of Spiral? I never saw it. Is it worth seeing? Because I didn't get good reviews. Uffman Entertainment, Mets against Dodgers. NLCS. Let's go Mets for Grimace. It's our year, man.
Wing!
Now look at this fucking clown. Did you see what he tweeted? I'll talk about that on the podcast. What a fucking weirdo. Not you, Havlick, though. You're not the weirdo. But yeah, Mets and Dodgers, man. It's going to be big. I don't know what the schedule is. I only hope I could see some of the games. I'm streaming almost every night, it feels like. I'll be at the Hog Show next Friday. I don't know how much of the actual games I'm going to get to watch, which sucks, because there's nothing better, man. There's nothing better than October baseball when your team is in the fucking playoffs. There's just nothing better. I'd sit and watch the entire game if I could, but I don't think I'm going to get to see too much of them. Joseph Stewart, why did China stop coming to the ring with Triple H after she won the Intercontinental title from Jeff Jarrett at No Mercy in 1999? Because she was the champion. She wasn't just a manager anymore. You have to conduct yourself like a champion. She shouldn't be coming out to the ring managing Triple H if you're the Intercontinental champion. That's silly. Wayne, if Kevin Owens and Randy Orton both turn, could you see Drew coming over as a face and aligning with Cody, which leads to Drew facing one of them at WrestleMania? I don't want to see Drew as a face. I like him so much as a heel. I don't want to see him as a face. I'm not ready for that yet. At some point he will be, but I'm just not ready for it. Alex, this Cody and KO storyline is starting to become one of the most intriguing feuds in WWE. Do you think this side quest that Cody is embarking on at Crown Jewel with Gunther will diminish their storyline? No, I don't think it's going to have any impact at all. And I think that if anything, Kevin Owens will cost him the match and they'll simply use it as a way to enhance the feud with Owens and Orton. Because Owens can cost Cody the Crown Jewel title, right? Whatever that's worth. 50 carats it has, you know, and he costs him the championship, costs Raw a win, or SmackDown, right? Cody's on SmackDown? I don't even know who's on what fucking brand anymore. Costs SmackDown the win. Why should Kevin Owens care? He's suspended anyway. So it'll help the story along. I don't think it hurts it. And you just do the match at Survivor Series instead of Crown Jewel, that's all. Huffman says, buy, rent, sell. Most justified heel. Brett in 97, Jericho in 08, or Drew in 2024. Brett in 97. Everything that Brett said was 100% true. I mean, you could take that. That's an evergreen statement I just made. Brett's usually right a lot of times on things, but Brett 97, I would buy on. I would I mean, a lot of what Drew said about Punk, frankly, isn't wrong either. I would rent on Drew and sell on Jericho. Jeremy Rose with the 11. Thank you, sir. Feeling down because my Padres choked badly. However, enjoying the show as always. Do you think Kevin Owens eventually gets the belt off of Cody? I think Cody losing the belt would make things much more interesting. I agree. I think they would, but I would put the belt on Orton. I would put the belt on Randy and not KO. I don't know what his contract situation is either, because supposedly his deal is coming up soon. I can't imagine him leaving. Yeah, maybe leaving if he wants to take time off like Becky Lynch is doing. I don't see him going anywhere. But I don't know how that might play into things. You know, are they going to gift him a title run to try to entice him to stay if they think he might leave? Anything's possible. I just think that if the belt is going to come off of Cody, it should go to Randy, and then you just kind of progress with their feud. To go from Cody to KO, and then maybe Cody gets it back, and then he would lose it to Randy. Now you're just playing hot potato with it. I don't want to do that. I go with Orton. Jeremy also says, could you see AJ in a retirement match against Cena at the end of next year? Or do you think that's too soon for AJ to hang it up? Thinking Survivor Series. It's up to AJ. I think he could go for another few years, but if he feels like his body can't take it anymore, or if the injuries really start piling up, then he may feel like, you know what, I can't go another year. So, do I see him having a retirement match with Cena? Like that's Cena's last match? Probably not. I do think I would like to see him and Cena one more time in the ring next year at some point, though. I don't think it's going to be Cena's last match, but I would like to see that on the Cena retirement tour. Cena and AJ. I mean, AJ was one of his greatest opponents. I won't say rivals. He's not one of like the top three rivals for Cena, but in terms of matches and like programs that Cena has had, AJ's right up there with Punk, as far as I'm concerned, for the matches that he gave to John Cena. I mean, the one in Brooklyn at SummerSlam in 2016 was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen live. And then the match they had at the Royal Rumble at the Alamo Dome the following year, where Cena won number 16. They didn't even leave the ring. That entire match happened in the ring. They didn't go to the floor. They didn't need tables and plunder and stuff. They just had a great wrestling match. Those two had a chemistry that not everybody has. I'd like to see them. I don't know if they can necessarily have the kind of match they did 7 years ago. Because frankly, Cena is just not that same level of performer anymore. He's really not. But I'd still like to see it one more time. Hisco 95. I think Meltzer is getting worked because it makes zero sense to have Rock return a Bad Blood if he's not even going to be at WrestleMania. I agree, it does not make sense, and that's why I kind of, when I mentioned that it came from The Observer, I said I know. Because sometimes Meltzer will report something and either he's got the wrong information or somebody's trying to work him, and it could very well be one of those situations here. I can't believe that Rock is not going to be at WrestleMania in some capacity. I just can't. I can't believe that. Like, how could he not be on that show? So I believe he will be there, but I'm just saying this is what's being reported today. But it's also October. It's October 11th. WrestleMania is not until April 19th. So a lot can happen between now and then. Base Beerus says, Solo, Lord of the Flies. Yeah, I haven't seen him since. I don't know where he went. But I got one of those salt guns. I just bought one. Supposedly these things really work. So if he knows what's good for him, he can fly out from whence he came. Because if he doesn't, I'm going to find him, and I'm going to kill him. Super Pony. Kevin Owens should take the title from Cody, not Randy. He doesn't need it. KO hasn't held a singles title since 2017, when he got screwed by Oldberg. Okay, well, when was the last time Randy Orton had a singles title? Probably longer than that, right? The Juliet, Todd Grisham's quote tweet to you, has been trending all day. Yes. Yes. I was not expecting when I tweeted my dislike of Bob Costas as a play-by-play announcer this season for the baseball games, because I think he's been fucking terrible. And I just used Todd Grisham's call of it's Christian when Christian came back to the company in 2009 in ECW. I just used that as an example. I actually said Todd Grisham showed more enthusiasm in that call than Bob Costas does doing commentary. And then Grisham quote tweeted that and actually for the first time revealed the reason why he called that way. And it became a news story and every website picked it up because we didn't know. And he said it was Vince McMahon who pulled him aside before he went out there that night and said, look, when Christian comes out, I don't want you to show any enthusiasm whatsoever. None. And he says, okay, yes, sir. Right? You're the boss. So So basically, Vince sabotaged Christian's return to the company in 2009 because he never liked Christian. He never liked him. He thought he was ugly. That's where the whole story comes from, where they were on the plane, like the corporate plane one day. And I forgot who originally told the story, but like JBL used to joke about it on commentary. Talk about like a blue dot over Christian's face. Vince McMahon wanted to put a blue dot over Christian's face on TV because he thought he had like a rat face and thought he was ugly. And that would have become like a funny gimmick. Yeah. Yeah. Great stuff. So anyway, I didn't know that my tweet was going to yield this this new bit of information, but I'm glad that it's out there now because it gives us another reason to say fuck Vince McMahon. Can't say that enough. CLB. Oh my God, yeah. That's right. Creepy little bastard. He's the CLB. God. Jeremy. Do you think Sammy Uso talks Jay into helping Jimmy and Roman out? Sammy and Jimmy always got along. I see that as a bridge to get everybody back. Yeah, that's kind of what I said before. I think we might get some segments where Sammy is trying to convince Jay of either going back with the bloodline or just imparting some wisdom on him that makes Jay maybe reconsider his position if he says no at first. That's the storytelling I'm talking about. You have to get that. You know, that's what I find interesting. All those segments when we had Sammy as part of the bloodline, they'd be in the back or whatever, sitting on the couch, and they were just interacting. Like, those were some of the best bloodline segments that we've ever gotten. That's storytelling. That's character development. That's what makes the shows interesting. That's what I want to see more of. Havili is with us tonight with the $13 super chat. Habili, thank you. I have mentioned this before, but the wrong way. If we didn't have the pandemic, in your opinion, between Kenny Omega, Hangman Page, and Cody Rhodes, would have turned on the Elite against the Inner Circle in the first Blood and Guts? Well, I forgot about that. We were supposed to get a Blood and Guts match, and I think it was going to happen in Newark. Weren't they going to have that show in Newark at the Prudential Center? And then the world shut down and the show got canceled. And we never did get that first Blood and Guts match until whatever it was, a year later, year and a half later. I honestly have no idea what would have happened in that Blood and Guts. So what you're proposing here, it's possible, but I don't remember thinking that going into the show, that there was going to be like a big turn or anything like that. So I don't know. I don't know what they had planned. I just know how disappointed I was that they had to cancel the match, but obviously they had no choice in the matter. Daniel Malcolm, hashtag let's fucking go Mets. Hell yeah, man. Huffman says NLCS schedule Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Sunday, Monday. Well, Sunday works for me, so that's good. Bread Hart. Danny Palmer of NXT posted that Hurricane Milton was sent to Florida to wipe out a red state. Austin Aries said the same. Sadder than Rick's tweet. I will simply say this. I will quote the very wise Big Damo, who said many years ago, some wrestlers are just fucking stupid. I don't know what else to tell you. Big Damo had it right. Some wrestlers are just fucking stupid, and I don't know what to say beyond that. Sidro. Did you hear about the stolen dog collar? Police are looking for leads. And why aren't kids allowed to see pirate movies? They're all rated R. God. They get worse. They somehow get worse. Nick Grosso. After tonight, I can see a Cody versus Owens versus Orton at Survivor Series. Do you agree? Yes, I do. J.R. Vasher, AJ Lee returns, or AJ Styles retires first? I think AJ Styles will retire before AJ Lee ever comes back to the ring. And he says, Old Brooklyn versus Old Brooklyn's replacement team. I'll take the replacement team over the Old Brooklyn team. 1957 was a long time ago when they left Brooklyn for L.A. Fuck the Dodgers. We're coming for you. We're coming for you. Bring your best. You're going to need it.
I love you, Solo. You are my tribal chief.
Hey, George, thank you for the 15. Otani is God. Sorry, Mets. Maybe next year. Every man is mortal. Every man has a weakness. Yeah, Otani went 0 for 4 today. What is this God stuff? He didn't look like a God today. I'm not too worried about it. This was the matchup I wanted anyway. I said that the other night. I'd rather go Dodgers than Padres. Even though it would have been sweet to get revenge on the Padres for 2 years ago when they bounced us out of the wild card, I think it was. But now it's going to be good. I mean, it's weird now. We have both New York teams in the championship series. So you got the Mets in the NLCS. You got the Yankees in the ALCS. And the odds of at least one New York team going to the World Series is very good. But, who was it? There was some baseball writer who posted a tweet and said that the likelihood of a Subway Series between the Mets and Yankees is like 25%. And then he used some weird math that just didn't make any sense. And there were comments in the comment section. And this was like a non-wrestling tweet. But like the comments had like Steiner math. And I just started cracking up laughing because I thought the same thing. I'm like, is this guy using Steiner math here? But yeah, I mean, at least one New York team should be able to make it to the World Series, and I'm just gonna fucking puke if it's the Yankees. I just can't. I can't deal with this. I just enough. I watched this Yankees team, and this Yankees team is fucking boring. I mean, come on. Even if you're a Yankee fan, you have to admit, you may want the Yankees to win. I get that. That's fine. You want the Mets to lose, but you can't, in all honesty, tell me. You can't tell me that this Yankee team is as fun or interesting or exciting to watch as the Mets. They're fucking boring. They have no life. There's no personality there. There's no charisma. Aaron Judge has the personality of a fucking doorknob. Give me a break. What a boring World Series that would be. Mets all the way. I don't want to hear this Yankees shit. CNM says, as a Red Sox fan, I forgive you all for 86. I'm rooting for the Mets. See, there's a guy who can put aside his differences, his bias, and accept things for how they are. Even he's willing to root for the Mets here in the postseason. And Jeremy Rose, Rock likes keeping Punk out of main events. Seemingly, yeah. I don't know. He's got it out for this guy. Seems that way. We are currently at 453 likes, which is a solid number. Thank you for that. Keep hitting that like button. Let's get to 500. But even better, I got a better idea. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
It is that time of week where we get to book a bunch of matches and see how we do. See, look at this. Even Connor in the chat is a Braves fan. I even got JD to admit the other day he's a big Braves fan. Even he's rooting for the Mets. Anybody but the Yankees. All right, be the booker. Start with tag teams here. How's this for a tag team? The Hart brothers, Bret Hart and Owen Hart. And no, I'm not talking about Bret Hart, who's been a channel member for 31 months and says, when I'm able to move to the U.S., I will pick the Mets as my team to suffer and celebrate alongside you and the other fans. We have a big tent. You're always welcome. We can always use a new member. Bret Hart and Owen Hart. I don't envision this being a buzzer unless we land on something just super horrible. If the Mets left New York, would you default to the Yankees? No. That's not how it works. That's not how it works. If the Mets left, I would still be a Mets fan. Bret and Owen are going to be taking on the Hart Foundation of Bret Hart and Jim the Anvil Neidhart. OMG. Are you kidding me? We landed on the Hart Foundation to take on the Hart Brothers. That means Bret Hart against Bret Hart, which is the greatest mirror match that we have ever booked in the history of Be the Booker. I mean, you know what's better than one Bret Hart match? You get Bret Hart twice in the same fucking match. Holy shit. It's a family affair, man. We got Bret, we got Anvil, we got Owen. I love it. This is like in the video game when if you pick, like, let the CPU pick. Like, if you pick Bret and then the CPU gets the pick and then you end up, it ends up picking Bret, but like it's a different color, like, outfit. I don't know if the new games are like that, but like the older games. Actually, the WrestleMania, the arcade game was like that. Where if you ended up facing yourself, the other guy would have to have like a different color, gear. So like you'd have a Bret Hart wearing pink and then a Bret Hart wearing blue or something like that. The only other color I could ever think that Bret wore, did Bret ever wear blue? He early in their run together, the Hart Foundation, they wore black. Maybe they did wear blue. I think they did. I don't remember. Maybe they were wearing blue at WrestleMania 2. All right, women's Be the Booker. That was a great way to kick things off. Let's hope we can keep this momentum going here. Arr, Beth Phoenix. Angry Beth Phoenix. She's pissed off at somebody, man. She's ready to tear somebody a new asshole. The question is who? Who is it going to be? Beth Phoenix against Stephanie Vaquer. Wow. I like it. You're going to get to see what Stephanie Vaquer can do because she's finally arrived in NXT. She's going to have her first match this coming Tuesday. And then we're off to the races. But yes, this was a no-brainer. This was a no-doubter right here. Man, this has been quite the addition of Be the Booker so far, I must say. And it's been so good that I think what we'll do here for the main event before we choose, we're going to choose a stipulation. One of those nights, we're going to pick a stip. We'll see what kind of a match it's going to be, and then we'll pick the participants, and it is going to be a dog collar match. Okay. All right. It's going to be bloody. It's going to be violent. We know that. So it's going to be a dog collar match, and Doink is not in it. Don't mind that. And take it for a spin. Ignore what you just saw. All right. Dog collar match. And we begin with Big Papa Pump. Scott Steiner is going to be... It looks like he's got a dog collar on his head. Scott Steiner in a dog collar match This is definitely going to be a bloody affair. Scott Steiner and William Regal in a dog collar match. Okay. All right. Hey. You know what? Regal's an old school guy. Steiner's an old school guy. And I think the two of them would actually have a very good dog collar match. A very stiff, violent affair. That's a clean sweep, folks. That might be the best edition of Be the Booker that we have had in over a month, at least. Final super chats here. Marios with the five says, saw that report of the other guy taking pics of feet. What was Rumplemane doing in St. Louis? Yeah, there was a fan that got kicked out not once, but twice. He got kicked out and came back in and got kicked out again at the hotel that the NXT talent were staying at in St. Louis the other day. And he was photographing the feet of the members of the female roster, I think in the lobby or whatever. So, yeah, we haven't heard from Rumplemane, but perhaps he's been traveling. I don't know. I don't claim him, though. So don't look at me. It's not my fault. And RDS Harry would love to see Cena and Owens one more time. Yeah, I would too. And if Owens really is going full-blown heel, then even better. Thank you guys for all of the love and the super chats and the support and the likes. Getting us to our goal tonight. Hit that like button on your way out if you have not already done so. We are getting very close to 82K on the channel. So one of these nights, we're going to hit 82,000. And maybe I'll be live with all of you when it happens. I don't know. But this Sunday is going to be episode 883 of The Sound Off. And so I hope you will all check that out. Be well. Stay safe. Enjoy the rest of your week. And I'll see you guys back here soon. Take care.